I'm sure all of us have been very at times guilty of having good intentions to carry out some deed, and yet it took a long time for those intentions to be fulfilled. Maybe, for example, you intended to call and visit someone, but in the busyness of life, that visit got pushed to the side, and from time to time, you were reminded of your intention to go and to visit that person, and it wasn't that you had changed your mind, it wasn't that you no longer intended to go, but in your priorities, it got pushed to the side. And so every so often, the intention again would be, I must see to that thing very soon. And it is possible that that was what happened to David here in the beginning of 2 Samuel chapter 9. He had made a covenant many years earlier with his friend Jonathan, the son of Saul. And that covenant had been made between those two brethren, David and Jonathan, in a very tense time for them both. Jonathan lamented how his father Saul had become jealous of David and had sought to do all that he could in order to spare David's life. And it was during that very stressful time that David and Jonathan entered into a covenant. If you turn back to 1 Samuel chapter 20, 1 Samuel chapter 20, and here in this chapter David and Jonathan are in conversation. 1 Samuel chapter 20 and verse 14, it says, "And thou shalt not only, while yet I live, show me the kindness of the Lord that I die not, but also thou shalt not cut off thy kindness from my house forever. Know not when the Lord hath cut off the enemies of David, every one from the face of the earth." So Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying, "Let the Lord even require at the hand of David's enemies." And Jonathan caused David to swear again, because he loved him, for he loved him as he loved his own soul. And there was this realization, even in those days, in the heart of Jonathan, that his father would one day be cut off, that even he himself, in the midst of conflict, would be cut off. And David, or Jonathan then pleaded with Jonathan that in that time that David would continue to show kindness, and if he was not there to his relatives that had survived. And David swiftly entered into that covenant. David had also even made an agreement with Jonathan's father Saul in chapter 24. Saul was pursuing David, and one of the occasions when David had an opportunity to destroy Saul, but he spared his life. And in the verse 20 of that chapter, it says, "And now behold, I know well that thou shalt surely be king, and that the kingdom of Israel shall be established in thine hand. Swear now therefore unto me by the Lord that thou wilt not cut off my seed after me, and that thou wilt not destroy my name out of my father's house." And David sware unto Saul. And so even David had made this promise unto Saul, that when this time would come, when he would come to the throne, and that Saul had departed, that Saul would continue to have kindness shown unto his family by David, who would then be sitting upon the throne. However, since those covenants were entered into, many important events had taken place. Saul and Jonathan had died. David had been made the king over Judah. But Abner, who had been the captain of Saul's army, had sought to hinder David from taking the throne. And he had placed another son of Saul upon the throne instead, Ishbosheth. And he had been upon the throne of the remainder of the tribes of Israel for a period of time. And there had then been a period of conflict between the house of Saul and the house of David. However, when that time of conflict came to an end, David then became king over all Israel. And after that time, you can imagine how David was an extremely busy man. He had many matters to look after in the palace, many matters of state that were on upon his mind. He was involved in battles. He had a very large family to see to. And so in the busyness of life, in all likelihood, he had forgot perhaps for a period of time, or at least it had slipped his mind for a period of time, to fulfill this covenant that he had made with Jonathan. But there came this problem that when this issue came again to David's mind, that he didn't actually know if any of the family of Jonathan survived. And so he made this inquiry in the palace, and the suggestion that was made that perhaps one of Saul's servants, Ziba, would have some knowledge as to if any of the sons or the children of Jonathan still survived. In the verse 1, it says, David said, "Is there yet any that is left of the house of Saul, that I may show kindness for Jonathan's sake?" And there was one of the house of Saul, a servant whose name was Ziba. And when they had called him unto David, the king said unto him, "Art thou Ziba?" And he said, "Thy servant is he." And it goes on then to speak of how David put this question to Ziba. "Do you know if there's anyone still from the house of Jonathan surviving on to this day?" And so the story of Mephibosheth came to light, how there was still a son of Jonathan that had survived, and how he was dwelling in a certain place. And here is David was reminded of this covenant, and his kindness was shown to Mephibosheth on account of this covenant. It's a great picture to us of God's covenant of grace. And God has entered into a great covenant whereby there are a people to whom he will show great kindness. And as Mephibosheth took of the great benefits of that covenant between David and Jonathan, so we as God's people are partakers of that great covenant, the covenant of God's grace. We want to look here tonight then, the covenant, a means of blessing for Mephibosheth. I want to see here, first of all, the cherishing in the covenant. Now, for there is a great emphasis down through this passage on the issue of love, and how love was shown unto Mephibosheth on account of this covenant. If you look there again at the verse 1, it says, "David said, is there yet any that is left of the house of Saul, that I may show kindness for Jonathan's sake?" And the verse 3, "Is there not yet any of the house of Saul, that I may show the kindness of God unto him?" And the verse 7, "David said unto him, fear not, for I will surely show thee kindness." And so this word, it has the idea of great favor. It has the idea of mercy. It has the idea of showing great love. And here as we see Mephibosheth, as he is set forth in this passage of Scripture, now, there is this great emphasis being brought before our attention that Mephibosheth, he was shown kindness, he was shown love on account of this covenant that had been entered into. You see, for onlookers that were considering Mephibosheth, to them he would have been the last person that ever would have been invited to the house of David. And there are a number of very obvious reasons for that. Had it not been for the covenant, Mephibosheth would never have been invited. First of all, the problem of Mephibosheth. If you look at the verse 3, down towards the end of the verse, Ziba said unto the king, "Jonathan hath yet a son, which is Liam, on his feet." And here it emphasizes to us that Mephibosheth had a great disability. And of course, we're not speaking against those that have disabilities. We ought as God's people to have a great compassion and love toward them. But you think here of this invitation that was extended to Mephibosheth. As he was called to the palace, he wasn't being called to be a great warrior. He wasn't being called to be involved in heavy manual work, because of this great physical disability that he had. And so in a sense, he wasn't going to be able to add financially to the house of David. He wasn't going to be involved in the work of the palace. He had this problem of being a cripple. He was crippled by a fall. And way back when he was only a young man, only a young child, when news came concerning the defeat of Saul, his nurse lifted him, and as she was fleeing, she dropped the young boy, and from that time he was Liam on his feet. It was unlikely that he would be called on account of his problem, but also on account of his place. If you look at the verse 4, it says, "The king said unto him, where is he? And Ziba said unto the king, behold, he is in the house of Michar, the son of Amiel, in Lodibar. And here as we think of the meaning of the names that are mentioned here, it shows in a sense how low Mephibosheth had gone. For Machir it means sold. And Lodibar it means the place of no pasture. Mephibosheth, he was dwelling in a place of no grazing. He was dwelling in a place of hunger. Surely as a place of no pasture, it was a place where there was no shepherd. There was none that would really care for him. You can imagine a place of no pasture. It must have been a place of malnutrition, a place of illness. And therefore, as we think of the place where Mephibosheth dwelt, in a sense, he was an unlikely person to be called into the palace. But then there was also the problem of his pedigree or his family. For he came from the family of Saul. And had it not been for this great covenant that existed, there certainly would have been none from the covenant of, or from the family of Saul, that would have been called to the house of David. For it was the practice in that day, and even it became the practice later in the nations of Israel and Judah, that when a king would come to the throne who was of a new dynasty, that means that he wasn't the son of the previous king, he wasn't a relative, a completely new family coming to the throne. When there was a new dynasty, everyone that was associated with the old dynasty was destroyed. In other words, all the sons of the previous king, they were put to death. And of course, to us, that sounds extremely harsh. But in those days, the throne was regarded to be very vulnerable. And so the king, in order to strengthen his position, he would do all that he could in order to remove any that would stand in opposition to him. And therefore it was a great mercy that even until this point that the life of Mephibosheth had been spared. But as I consider these three details, the problem of Mephibosheth, his place and his position, surely it reminds us of the sinner. If you turn over to Romans chapter 5, Romans chapter 5, and here we find that if it was not for the covenant of God's grace, that we never would have been called onto the Father's house, that we never would have found God's salvation. In Romans chapter 5 and verse 6, it says there, "For when we were yet without strength, in due time Christ died for the ungodly." And here speaking of those that are without Christ, they are described as those who are without strength, those who are weak. Does that not remind you of Mephibosheth, the one who was a cripple, the one who was lame upon his feet? And the idea there of those words, without strength, is this, that there was nothing that we could work up in ourselves. There was nothing that we could do to please the Holy God. And the reason was this, because we were crippled by a fall. We were crippled by the fall of Adam. And on account of the fall of Adam in the garden, we were as a people that were without strength. So we have here the sinner's problem. But if you look down in the verse 8, we have a reminder of the sinner's place. It says there, "God commendeth his love toward us, in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us." And here the ungodly, they are described as being sinners. And surely as we think of this word, the sinner, those who have fallen short of God's great standard, can we not liken them unto Mephibosheth? They are dwelling in a place of no pasture. They are abiding in a place of no security. They are abiding in a place of great danger. They are in the house of Machir. They are sold unto their sin. They have no shepherd. They are under the enslavement of the devil. But then it also speaks here of the sinner's pedigree. For if you look at the verse 10, it says, "For if when we were enemies, we were reconciled to God by the death of his son, much more being reconciled, we shall be saved by his life." We were enemies. And the very reason why we were enemies was because of the family that we belong to. We were of the race of Adam. If you look at the verse 12 of that chapter, it says, "Wherefore as by one man sin entered into the world, and death by sin," speaking of course of the sin of Adam, in the verse 17, "For if by one man's offence death reigned by one," in the verse 18 there, "Therefore as by the offence of one, judgment came upon all men to condemnation." And here we have this great description of the sinner's family, the sinner's pedigree of the house of Adam. And since they're of the house of Adam, they're under condemnation. And dear unsaved one in the meeting tonight, here in Mephibosheth, there's a very accurate picture of yourself. Tonight, if you are without Christ, you have this great problem. You're lame upon your feet. You're crippled by a fall. Now, there is this problem of your place. You're dwelling in the place of no pasture. Now, there is this great problem with your family. You're in the house of Adam. You're under condemnation. How then was any kindness ever shown unto Mephibosheth? Well, back there in 2 Samuel chapter 9, it says, David said, "Is there yet any that is left of the house of Saul, that I may show him kindness for Jonathan's sake?" And you see, as we think of ourselves in our unsaved days, likened in this person of Mephibosheth, and the Lord, he came, and there was this great question, or there was this great statement, "I will show kindness for the sake of Christ." And God, he entered into a great covenant of grace. Now, there were a people that the Lord was pleased to set his love upon. And had it not been for the person of Christ, had it not been for the great work of the cross, there was absolutely no hope for we who were without Christ. For in each of those verses that we read in Romans chapter 5, when it speaks of our past, it goes on to speak, "But Christ died." But Christ reconciled us. The great message is that if it had not been for the cross, there was absolutely no hope for the sinner. God's people then now are a people that are loved with an everlasting love. There is this cherishing in the covenant. But I want to see here, secondly, the choice in the covenant. If I want to emphasize that Mephibosheth didn't come one morning and knock on the palace door of David and say to him, "I am coming to you. I have a right to be received into your home because you made a covenant with my father, and I demand that you show kindness unto me." That was not how it happened at all. The one who showed an interest, first of all, it was David. And all the time that Mephibosheth was dwelling in Lodibar, in all likelihood, either he was totally unaware of that great covenant that David had entered into with Jonathan, or else he never believed that he would be allowed to partake of the benefits of it. He was dwelling all that time in the place of no pasture, but it was David that came searching for him. Now, that reminds me of words in Isaiah 65 in the verse 1, "I am sought of them that ask not for me. I am found of them that sought me not." And God's people are a people that have been found by the Lord. The Lord, he went searching for them. The Lord, he came seeking the lost. And as God's people, we can certainly say we sought the Lord because he first sought after us. Because there was this great question asked by the Lord, "Is there a people that I will show kindness unto on account of the sake of Christ?" There is then this great choice in the covenant. But I want to see here, thirdly, the call of the covenant. If we're on account of this covenant that David had with Jonathan, there was a great summons, a great invitation issued in the verse 5. It says, "Then King David sent and fetched him out of the house of Michar the son of Amiel from Lodibar." And here it says that David sent for Mephibosheth and he fetched him. And the word "fetch" there, it not only has the idea of sending for, but it has the idea of stretching out for. And here David, as he sent this invitation for Mephibosheth to come and to dwell in his home, it was not some casual invitation. But the emphasis in the Hebrew is this, that David was really appealing for Mephibosheth to come. He was stretching out. He was longing for him to come. He was offering every argument that he could to persuade Mephibosheth to come and to dwell in the palace of a king. Can you imagine if Mephibosheth had said, I'm not interested in that invitation. I want to stay in the place of no pasture. What a foolish decision that would have been. And yet, is that not exactly what so many sinners are doing today? They are dwelling in the place of no pasture. They are sold onto sin. And all the time there is this great invitation being issued. There is this stretching forth. The Lord, he is appealing to the sinner. The Lord, he invites the sinner, come unto me. And yet so many, they will not come to the palace. So many prefer to remain in their sin. So many prefer to remain under the condemnation of the family of Adam. They will not come unto Christ. And Mephibosheth then, there was this great invitation that was issued to him. And tonight it is so for you, dear sinner. There's an invitation in the gospel. What is it that has kept you from coming to Christ? What is it that has been a hindrance unto you? What is it that has kept you from coming to the palace of the King of Kings? May you even tonight respond to the Lord as he would seek to fetch you unto himself. There is then this cherishing in the covenant, the choice in the covenant, the call in the covenant. I want to see here finally the care in the covenant. For as Mephibosheth came to dwell with David and to meet with David, what a blessing he found when he came to the palace. If you look at the verse 7, it says, David said unto him, Fear not, for I will surely show thee kindness for Jonathan thy father's sake, and will restore thee all the land of Saul thy father, and thou shalt eat bread at my table continually. And there were two great blessings in store for Mephibosheth. All the land that belonged unto Saul, that was now going to be returned unto Mephibosheth. And then there was a second blessing. He was going to be brought continually to feast at the table of David. I want to look here first of all at the issue of the territory or the land. For evidently David, when he became king of Israel, all the land of Saul had passed into his possession. And it is believed that Saul indeed did own a very sizable portion of land. His father, remember, was called Kish. And we read of him in 1 Samuel chapter 9 and the verse 1 that he was a mighty man of power or a mighty man of substance. He was an extremely wealthy man. And in all likelihood then, Saul, he owned a considerable portion of land. And all this land was now being given into the hand of Mephibosheth. And I believe this is a great picture of all that is returned to those that come to the Lord Jesus Christ for salvation. For remember way back in the Garden of Eden, when Adam was created, he was created in the image of God. And in the Catechism in question 10, it said, God created man, male and female, after his own image, in knowledge, righteousness and holiness, with dominion over the creatures. Adam was created in righteousness, knowledge, and holiness. But when Adam fell, he lost that territory, we could say. He lost out on the knowledge, the righteousness, and the holiness. And Adam was stripped of that knowledge of the person of the Lord while there was that desire. After the Lord, in a sense, he remained a religious being, he lost out on that knowledge of who the Lord really was. He lost out on the issue of righteousness. And no longer was his desire continually toward the things of God, but he chose sin. And no longer was he in the paths where he was after holiness, but he had this bent towards sin. But when a dear sinner comes and seeks Christ and salvation, there is a restoration of knowledge, righteousness, and holiness. We read in Colossians 3 in the verse 10, "And have put on the new man, which is renewed in knowledge, after the image of him that created him." He is renewed. He is restored. That territory is given back to him again in Ephesians 4 in the verse 24. "And that ye put on the new man which after God is created in righteousness and true holiness." Again, it's speaking of how when a sinner comes unto the Lord, though he chose the way of sin in days past, and now his desire is chiefly after the things of the Lord. Now, there is then this great restoration. But Mephibosheth not only had the blessing of restored territory, but there was the blessing of the table. And it's emphasized over and over again in this passage concerning the table. If you look at the end of the verse 7, it says, "Thou shalt eat bread at my table continually." And the verse 10, and near the end of the verse, "But Mephibosheth, thy master's son, shall eat bread alway at my table." And again, it's found at the end of the verse 11. And so it is being emphasized over and over again that there was this great feasting that would be taking place with Mephibosheth, that every day he would come and he would feast at the table of David. And you imagine how lavish that table would have been. And every day as Mephibosheth came to the table, there was plenty to satisfy him at that table. Does that not remind us of what the Lord offers to the sinner today? Remember how the Lord spoke in Matthew chapter 22 of the marriage feast of the king's son. And it speaks there of how those that were bidden, they were told to come. It says, "My oxen, my fatlings are killed, and all things are ready. Come on to the marriage." And the Lord's table, it is prepared. Now, the Lord, as he came and died upon the cross, as he gave his life in the place of the sinner, the great table, the great place of feasting, it has been prepared. And the sinner today is invited to come on to that table. In Luke 14, we read the parable of the great supper. And it speaks there of how a servant at supper time was sent to say, "Come, for all things are now ready." And as that invitation was issued, remember how at first those that were invited, they would not come. And then the lame, they were invited. The maimed, the poor, those who were despised, they were invited to come in, and they came as such. They came as those who were poor. They came as those that were maimed, as those that were halt, those that were blind. They came acknowledging their great need. And surely it was the same for Mephibosheth. As Mephibosheth came to the table, he came as one that was needy. He came as one that recognized that he was so undeserving. He came as one that couldn't pay for the feast, but he came all the same. And tonight, dear sinner, there is an invitation for you to come and to feast at the table of the Lord. You can't pay for it, but praise God, the price already has been paid in the precious blood of the Lord Jesus Christ. And the Lord, he says to you tonight, "Come, for all things are now ready." The table, it reminds us of feasting. But surely the table also reminds us of fellowship. Now, you think of when a great gathering come to a feast, the people that meet around the table, they enter into conversation. They fellowship one with another. And so then, as Mephibosheth came each and every day to the table of David, there was this sweet communion between David and Mephibosheth. We sang the words of Psalm 23 at the beginning of the meeting, of the preparation of the Lord's table. And it speaks there in the verse 6, "I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever." Now, there's not only that communion, not only that fellowship in time, but an eternal fellowship, an eternal communion. Tonight there's this invitation, come and enter into fellowship with the Lord. Though you're now estranged, though you're now cut off from the Lord, an enemy of the Lord, come and be at one with him. But surely this table, It not only reminds us of feasting and fellowship, it reminds us of family. For if you look there at the verse 11, down towards the end of the verse, it says, "As for Mephibosheth, said the king, he shall eat at my table as one of the king's sons." Aren't those beautiful words? Now you think of this one that was banished from the house of David. This one that was living in terror concerning David. And now he was invited to come to the table. And he was not only permitted to enter into the palace, but he was considered to be a son of David. And though this man probably was about 25, in a glorious sense he was adopted into this family. And that's the invitation of the gospel. Though tonight you're cut off, though tonight you're outside, you can enter in not only into Christ to find peace and to find safety, but into the very family of God, and you can call yourself a son of God. Tonight you can leave this meeting and say, "I'm a child of the King. I've been invited to come and to feast at the King's table as one of the King's sons." And maybe tonight you're living like the prodigal. You're longing even just to eat of the husks that are offered to the pigs. You're eating that which cannot fully satisfy. And all the time, there's a table that's spread, cut off from God, under the dominion of Satan. But tonight you can enter into Christ. Tonight you can come and be under Christ. Come into Him and find that joy in feasting at the table of the Lord. May the Lord bless His word tonight to all our hearts.